Friday already a quiz. Just is not the best way to end the day.
Oh, well, that might, well, except I can't easily change it because the other class didn't object. So I probably could. I can do what I want, like have the quiz. So how many of you have tests? So what? How many of you have tests on Friday, and what test?
100-point chemistry exam.
So are the people in the other class likely to have that same test?
Yeah. All those kids in your 11:20 class or in my 9:40 class?
So when?
Every single one.
Every single
one. Okay. Well, so I think I'll convert it to a pop quiz that I don't count. How's that?
I'm okay with that.
Because I think it's helpful to have the questions to study for the exam. So I'll hand out the piece of paper, but I won't do anything with it, just like I did with quiz 5.5. Pop exam. Yeah, it's supposed to be an O. Okay, other questions?
How do you get the, so then, do you know the scale, on this WebAssign, the scale, it was measuring the iron and block?
Oh, question 43.
I just don't understand how to set up to get the bottom scale.
Yeah. So there's a trick. I'm not surprised that you're surprised. And so why assign problems with tricks, I guess? It's because we're going to be doing basically exactly this in lab next. So let's talk about the first part first. So we have this block, and if it's not in oil, it weighs as 2 kilograms. We put this thing in oil. And now there's a new force acted. There's a buoyant force that's pulling it up. And so if this is supporting it, then this doesn't have to support it as much. So if we draw our kind of free body diagram, we have the spring force up, the buoyant force up, and the weight going down, having to be zero. So the spring force is now less than the weight, according to the buoyant force. Okay, so what's going on with the oil? Why does it care at all whether there's iron in it or not? Why isn't it the same? So the thing certainly weighs exactly the same as it did before, right? So the oil plus the container, it still has exactly the same weight, and it's still being supported by that spring scale. What's new and different? Well, what's new and different is Newton's third law. However hard the oil pushes the iron up, the iron is pushing the oil down. So if we write down our net force, we've got the spring force up, we've got the buoyant force down, we've got gravity down. So the spring force is now going to weigh more than it did before. Because if the oil is lifting the iron is pushing down on the oil.
And then for the spring force, we can just use the old equation that we've always used?
No. So the fact that this is a spring is not particularly relevant. So this is a typical spring scale that's in units of newtons.
So we actually, that's what we're calculating.
Yes, this is exactly what we're calculating.
Okay.
You're cogitating.
Is that A or B to the problem on the left? That's the first problem.
This is B.
That's B.
And this is A. Here we were asking what the forces were on the iron, and here we're asking what the forces were on the oil.
So would you add the weight of the container onto the force?
Yes. So this MG is the weight of everything that was there before, the oil plus the container.
Oh, MG is?
Yes. Here, this MG is the weight of everything here, the oil plus the container.
Okay.
This M was just the weight of the iron.
Oh, I have a question on the two equations on the right, right board.
Oh, these?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about today.
Okay, just wondering, I can't tell what's a P or what's the rho, or if there is a P, that P1, I can't tell what the difference is.
Yeah.
It's momentum.
So these guys are all rows.
Can we come up with some little different way to denote that?
Can we have a slash?
Yeah, just a slash or curve it off into the left.
Well, it's pretty curvy. So you want it more curvy, huh?
That would be perfect.
That works.
Okay. I'll try and give you more curves. More questions.
So the left one, the mass is
So M is the mass of the body we're considering. And here we're considering the oil plus the container, and here we're considering the iron. More questions? Well, so we had a boatload of equations last time, and I'm hoping that it's not quite so bad because they're either familiar, like I sure hope that you've talked about density and pressure sometime in chemistry, or they're fairly simple linear equations like these strain stress equations. So the one thing that might be new to you about pressure is kind of the unit we use. So more, if you listen to the weatherman, he's going to give you pressure in inches of mercury. And not uncommonly, pressures are given in multiples of one atmosphere. But we're going to use as our unit a pascal, which is a newton per square meter. And since a square meter is big and a newton isn't much, one pascal is a pretty small pressure. So atmospheric pressure is going to add up to about 100,000 pascals. As opposed to in metric units, or excuse me, in English units, it's kind of a more familiar number, like 15 pounds per square inch. So density, I have to believe you've talked about for years. It's just the mass divided by the volume. And you can make this guy a little bit curlier to make it look like a row. So the other equations say that when you apply stresses to things, they're going to change their shape. If you try and pull things, they're going to elongate, and the amount of the elongation is given to us by Young's modulus. If you're pushing something to the side, we're talking about a shear stress, then the amount of the push to the side can be calculated by the shear modulus. If we're talking about a whole object, when you put it under high pressure, it's going to shrink. The change in volume is given to us by the bulk modulus.
So what is the big L on the bottom of the shear?
So these are lengths.
So I know on the website it's the length of the board he's standing on then?
He's at the end of the board, yep. Mm-hmm.
Or is it going to be how far
No, that's delta X is how far it went down.
Okay.
More questions? Okay, so I'm hoping that this is not too much, not over your head as it were. We talked about pressure change with depth. So the reason we have atmospheric pressure is we're at the bottom of an ocean of air. It weighs something. Density of air is about 1.3 kilograms per cubic meter. And in general, if we change altitude in a fluid, the change in pressure is given by this relationship. Now, pressures produce forces if there are areas. So if we think about an object that is in a fluid, the pressure at the bottom is going to be more than the pressure at the top. So the top is going to push down less than the bottom is being pushed up. Side by side, those forces are going to cancel. So there's going to be some net force if we add up all of those arrows. And it looks like a complicated process. But what Archimedes realized is that the sum of those forces has to give you the weight of the fluid that would be there if the object wasn't there. That's called the fluid that's displaced. So The density of the fluid times the volume is the mass of the fluid that's displaced, and that times g gives us what we call the buoyant force. So another degeneracy in notation, the B of buoyant force is exactly the same symbol that's being used for the B of bulk modulus. There's no relationship between those two symbols, right? So more confusion. Oh, we had this kind of iceberg equation where we were looking at the volume that's underwater compared to the total volume, and we said it was just the ratio of density. We proved that it was the ratio of densities of the iceberg divided by the density of the fluid. Questions? So I pretty much was able to fool lots of people lots of the time with iQuiz questions for the last class. Let's see how I do with you. So we got two dams that are identical in shape and size. The only difference is the amount of water that's backed up behind them. One is containing a big lake, 4 million cubic meters. One's containing a smaller lake, but it still has the same size, same depth of water. Which dam has the greater force? So, I mean, it kind of depends on the situation. If I have a glass of water and I put something in it, then that water is going to have to flow around it. So the level of the water will have to increase if I put something in it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I realize that it would increase, but, like, that's where it would just go out and around? Okay, that specific water.
Well, and it doesn't really matter that it's that literally water that was displaced. All we really care about is the volume of that water, which is the volume of the object. So I think that's a little bit confusing to talk about the volume displaced, because it doesn't matter really what molecules were displaced. It's just the mass of material that would be there if that object wasn't there. I see 4 votes. 5 votes. I see people reaching for their votes. I'm surprised that the people are voting for B. Just is that the logic being that it's always the opposite of what it seems to be? No, so it has exactly the same depth, but the other lake goes back further, right? So one lake looks like this, and here's the dam, and the other lake looks like that, and there's the dam. And if we were to look face on at those dams, they're identical. D, okay, so I'm happier with D. Right, the pressure just depends on depth. So it doesn't matter whether there's just an inch of water in front of the dam. Right, so this is the area that's filled with water. Still, when you go down 10 meters, the pressure is whatever it is. And that makes a force on this object. So the Dutchman who holds back the Atlantic by putting his finger in the dike, he could just as well be holding back, you know, spit or something like that. All that really matters is how deep the water is. That's going to determine what the pressure is and therefore what the forces are.
So what is the force in relation to this problem then? Are they not the same though still?
Between what and what? Yeah. So here's one really stupid dam that has just a foot of water in front of it. And here's a more logical dam in which the water goes out for a mile in that direction, but it has exactly the same altitude. If you were to pick any square centimeter here on each dam, there'd be the same pressure on it and hence the same force on it. And that's true of every square centimeter. And so the total has to add up to exactly the same. Obviously, the ones at the bottom have bigger pressures and hence bigger forces, but the total force is going to be the same because centimeter by centimeter, it's exactly the same.
So these are the same?
Yes. Okay. So, astronaut, you know that if you have ice, it's going to be 9/10 submerged. Is that true on the moon, too?
No.
So there's less gravity on the moon. Is it, the iceberg going to pop up higher? I'm not fooling as many people, but I'm fooling one at least. No G in this equation, right? The G's canceled out. So icebergs float exactly the same on Mars as they do here.
But what if the water's not staying in the glass?
If it's boiling away?
Well, it's in space, so.
But it's on the moon. She's not in space. There, the iceberg and the things would just float around each other. I agree with that. So you take a glass and you start pushing it underwater. How far do you have to push it so that because of the pressure, the glass is half filled with water and half filled with air? Halfway down. So you only have to push it a foot here, but in the Atlantic, I have to push it several kilometers?
No, like the glass length. Like it has to be more than half the glass height down. I guess I don't understand what the question really is because there's no answers.
Yeah, there aren't any answers. So if you have some water, here's our glass full of air, and I start pushing it down. How far do I have to push it down vertically until there's half air and half water in this glass?
Easy, until the pressure pushing up on it is large enough to make it half full.
And what is that pressure? We haven't talked about it yet, but I'm sure, and that's why there isn't answers here. But you all have, I'm sure, seen the ideal gas law. So you know that if you want to get half the volume, you have to double the pressure. Yeah, so we have to double atmospheric pressure.
Oh, so you have to go down one atmosphere.
Yeah, you have to go down one atmosphere, and you know that the density of water is about 1,000, and you know that G is about 10, and we want to get to 100,000, so we need to go down about 10 meters.
In the sink?
Say again?
You have to put that cup 10 meters?
Yeah, it's hard to do in that sink, I agree. It's a very deep sink. It's a bottomless sink. But I filled it up with water anyway. Okay, so once it's down there, what's the buoyant force on it? How does it compare to the buoyant force when it's closer to the surface?
Same.
You could just as well be holding up a blank card. Okay, I'm not fooling very many people. So the buoyant force just depends on the volume of water that's displaced. It's smaller volume now, it's only half as much. So the buoyant force is going to be half as much. So there's going to be half as much buoyant force because there's less volume displaced. Are you happy enough with that? Yes. So the object includes the air. So if I were to push this thing down to the surface, it would be all of this air, all of this volume, right? Because it would all be filled with stuff. And that volume would decrease as this thing went down because this bottom part would fill with water.
Oh, it's okay.
Yep. Confusion about the questions. Well, try and get more concrete questions. So a boat is carrying a boulder, it's floating in the lake, you throw the boulder overboard, and it sinks, of course. What happens to the water level in the lake?
Relative to boat and
boulder. Yeah, so the original situation is boulder in boat, the final situation is boulder sunk. Where did the water... What happened to the water?
Oh, while the boat's still on
the in the boat is still there. The boulder is now on the bottom. Compare and contrast these situations. I'm fooling lots of people on this one. I think I'm fooling everyone on this one. Okay, so here's the lake shore, and here's the water, and here's the boat. So when I put the boulder in the boat, then of course the water level has to go up, right?
Right.
And if I take directly the boulder and put it in the lake, the water level has to go up.
But
so the question is, which one does it go up more for? Yeah, which one does it go up more for? If the boulder is floating in the boat, the water level goes up more.
So it could be. I was right.
Eventually. More than if you just put the object in directly.
So does the water actually rise or does the boat actually sink? You know? Like,
yeah,
yeah,
the water level has to rise, right? So if you put something in your bathtub, the water level goes up.
So the water level just goes up because the thing is heavier and that's sinking, so it looks like it's going up higher.
There isn't more water, if that's what you're saying. The amount of water is the same. But if you put stuff in your bathtub, you put the hippopotamus in your bathtub, the result is the water comes out of the tub.
So it technically stays the same.
So how does it...
No, the level changes.
Does it sink or...
Does
it stay
the
same?
So let's...
For this answer, the water level of the lake sinks. Because the boat's not pushing down on the water as much. Since the boat pushes down the water rises.
So when I put the boulder in the boat, how much does the water rise? You don't need to know answer of any of those questions.
So common logic, get rid of it. Well, if the boulder is really big, then they would put a tear hole through the bottom of the boat and nothing would happen at all.
So if we put the boulder in the boat, the buoyant force has to be big enough to support the weight of the boulder, right?
Agreed.
So we know that mg, the weight of the boulder, has to equal the density of the fluid, the volume that is displaced, times g. G's cancel. It's, I think, helpful to rewrite the mass of the boulder in terms of the density. Sorry, these aren't curly enough. the density of the boulder and the volume of the boulder. So what we've got then is that the density of the boulder times the volume of the boulder is equal to the density of the fluid times the volume that's displaced. So since the boulder is denser than the fluid, the volume that's displaced is more than the volume of the boulder.
Can you say that one more time, please?
So,
just like word for word.
So we've come to this conclusion that when we put the boulder on the boat and it's floating, that the mass of the boulder has to equal the mass of the fluid that's displaced. And that led to this relationship. We know that the boulder has a bigger density than the fluid, and that means that the volume has to be more than the volume that's displaced has to be more than the volume of the boulder. Okay, so when we put the boulder in the boat, the thing has to go up an equivalent of the volume of this volume, right? The density of the boulder divided by the density of the fluid times the volume of the boulder. It has to go up more than the volume of the boulder. Whereas if you were to just dump the boulder in the water level only has to go up to make the volume of the boulder. Is that okay or not? So those two situations are easier to compare. Obviously, if I compare the situation with the boat in the boulder to this situation, the water level had to fall. Another way of saying it is that when the boulder's on the bottom, it's not being supported by a buoyant force. That's why it sunk.
So is the V on the right the total volume of everything?
It's just the volume of the boulder.
The other V.
That's the volume displaced. Yes. Yes. There isn't no buoyant force. There's less of a buoyant force.
So the buoyant force causes more displacement than adding the boulder.
The buoyant force had to support the full weight of the boulder, and so a bigger volume was required. The bigger the buoyant force, the bigger volume has to be displaced. So less buoyant force means less volume displaced. So the lake level goes down.
Okay.
Not compared to nothing being there, but compared to with the boulder in the lake. The boulder in the boat. Okay, make it a wooden box. How does that change things? So it's the same situation, the box is in the boat, that's the given level, now you throw the box overboard, does the level increase or decrease or stay the same? Say again? No, it's just box this time, no boulder. There's still a diversity of opinion. So either way, the box is floating. So exactly the same buoyant force is involved under both circumstances. So exactly the same volume is displaced. So the lake level is not going to be changed.
So the buoyant level is the same with the box and the boat, and then when the box is thrown overboard.
So the buoyant force that's necessary to support the box in the boat is exactly the same buoyant force that's necessary to support the box sitting in the water floating.
And the boat.
And the boat still. But with or without the boat. So for the rock, the buoyant force when it's sitting on the bottom is less than the buoyant force when it's in the boat, because when it's in the boat it has to support its full weight.
The weight of the rock and the boat.
Say again?
The weight of the rock and the boat.
Yeah, the boat is a common factor. So you can deal with it in any way you want. Okay. So the next situation is maybe a little bit hard to understand. You've got two things that are exactly balanced, an iron ball and a big plastic ball. So here we have big plastic ball, little iron ball, exact balance. And this is all done in air. So now I put this thing in a bell jar and I suck the air out. Does the plastic ball rise, sink, or stay at the same level? Vote. That's an A. Absolutely can't read that.
That's small.
Oh, I see. It's the black thing at the bottom. Okay. I wasn't even sure what it was. I see mostly non-voters.
Oh, I wasn't voting. Sorry.
So when this thing is sitting in air, there's a relatively big buoyant force because there's a big volume displaced. When I take the air out, there's no buoyant force anymore. So the force on this side has been reduced, so clunk. It's going to sink.
So that's the
iron ball. That's the plastic ball.
So the plastic ball is
the plastic ball will rise?
No, the plastic ball sinks.
Like, just because of the volume?
I feel like the big ball.
Just because the volume. This is plastic, this is iron, right? They have the same mass, so I mean they balance.
Is it on a fulcrum?
Yes.
Okay.
So
although
bigger density, what makes the larger one rise or sink? What makes the larger one sink when there's no buoyant forces?
It didn't sink it. What made it sink when I take out the air?
Yeah.
Because the buoyant force was supporting it.
Now
there's no buoyant force.
But there's buoyant force supporting the iron as well.
But much, much less, right?
Because there's less volume.
Because there's less volume.
So it is just dependent on volume. Okay.
Yes, volume is the important factor. So that's kind of the initial situation. We have balance with those forces, and now we eliminate both forces. So we eliminated more here. This guy goes down.
Is the iron one, though, going to go down?
No, it's a fulcrum, right? What goes up, one goes up, one goes down. Okay. Maybe this one's clearer. So we've got a block of wood and a rock tied to it. And the way it works on the left is that exactly half of the balsa block is submerged. I flip it upside down, and the question is, what's the situation? Yes. You weren't voting, you were just holding, huh?
Wait a second.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're tied together, right?
I apologize.
No.
No, I don't apologize.
I'm fooling. Boy, this is going to be a fun exam.
Oh, wait, the box will be less than half. Yeah, okay.
So something is the same, right? Exactly the same buoyant force is required, so exactly the same total volume will be displaced, but now part of that volume is rock. So there's going to be less volume of the balsa.
Yeah, so I don't know why I was confusing myself.
The way it pictured is the way it works.
Yeah,
the way it pictured is the way it works.
The picture is so that way.
So what happens to the water level?
As in like all the way to the shore type of thing?
Yeah, if this is in your bathtub.
Oh, well, in that case. Oh, of the container.
So it's the same buoyant force, because we have to support the same weight. So same volume displaced, so remains unchanged. Hmm.
Wait. How does that make sense?
Wait. If there's less area being displaced,
no, the same area, the volume.
It's the same mass, so the buoyant force has to be the same in both of these circumstances.
Because it's all one volume.
Wrong. You compress the volume. I was thinking that because there's less water being displaced.
But there's not less water displaced. Exactly the same amount of water has to be displaced.
Balsa wood thicker than the, or denser than the block? Or?
No, balsa is a low density, but I don't think that matters for the answering the question.
Okay, so looking at this image, there is less balsa wood submerged when the rock is on the bottom.
Right.
Yes.
And you have that rock on the bottom.
Right.
And yet it displaces the same amount.
Yes.
When it's the other way around.
Yes.
Yep.
Even though the rock is more dense.
Yes.
And it's all being forced down the same amount. It's just the.
So is there less of the block in the thing then?
Is the rock what?
Is there less of the block in water then?
Yeah, when the rock is on the bottom, there's less of the block.
Yeah, that's what the question is. How much of the block is in the water? Right, that's what the question asks. Where's the water line on the block? And this is the answer. Looks just like that. It has to have the same volume. It has to have the same volume, right? So if it has the same volume and some of it is now rock, there's going to be less balsa. The water level should be unchanged, right? This question here is unchanged. Because it's the same volume. Right? So the buoyant force has to be the same in both of these circumstances, because the buoyant force is supporting the entire weight. Same buoyant force, same volume displaced, same level. Hmm. Two objects, same volume, are placed in water. Object A floats, object B sinks. The greater buoyant force is on which object?
Wait, until it gets to the bottom, or wait.
So object B is sitting on the bottom, object A is floating.
Oh, and so at this moment, the one sitting on the bottom.
B is sitting on the bottom.
Okay. I thought, as it was still sinking.
B. B is the answer.
What?
So, the size of the buoyant force depends on the volume that's displaced. If the object is floating, some of its volume is not displacing water. Whereas the thing that is sunk, 100% of its volume is displacing water.
But the buoyant force doesn't have to fight gravity anymore because it's on the bottom.
Well, but the buoyant force doesn't fight gravity one way or the other. It's always equal to the volume, the weight of the water displaced.
Okay, so then in that air problem, how does that, when we're sucking out air, we were saying that the buoyant force is less, so that's why it sinks. So then how come it can be a greater force when it sinks? You know?
Oh, you're comparing very, very different things.
I thought you said that the boulder, when it was on the ship, displaced the water more.
So first of all, let's deal with this problem a little bit more. So if I push the sinking thing down, how did the buoyant force compare between object A and object B? So I'm pushing object A down, so it's now underwater.
If it's sinking, it's going to have a...
So it's not sinking. I'm holding it at a constant depth. Nope, because the buoyant force just depends on the volume that's displaced. So if both things are totally underwater, they have the same volume, they both displaced exactly the same amount of water, so they have to have exactly the same buoyant force. When object A pops to the surface, now it's displacing less water, so there's less of a buoyant force on it. So we want to focus on the volume that's displaced.
The volume of the water that's displaced.
Yes. It's the only displacing that happens. So, wood and iron have equal volumes. The wood floats, the iron sinks. Which has the greater buoyant force on it? Yeah, it's exactly the same question, right?
So what about the one right above it? The two objects are the same.
Oh, I skipped over one, huh? Oh, yes, yep. So, for the very first question, those two objects had the same volume. Now what happens if they have the same mass? And object A still floats and object B sinks. So object A better have a lower density, so it better have a bigger volume than B. Which one has the greater buoyant force?
These are in separate tubs.
I believe it. Yep, A. So, how to figure it? So for A, we know the buoyant force is equal to its weight. That's why it's floating. For object B, we know the buoyant force is less than its weight. That's why it's sunk. And the size of the buoyant force tells you the... So we're done. Yeah. So for A, the buoyant force has to equal its weight. For B, the buoyant force has to be less than its weight because it sunk. You're not happy, Dan. Well, I think that's enough. So I'm not sure what the previous is. So these two questions differ. Here we have the same volume, and here we have the same mass.
So A has to have the volume because...
So if they have the same volume and A floats, it's only displacing a fraction of its volume, and so it only has a fraction of the buoyant force. In this one here, we can directly compare the weights. If object A floats, the buoyant force is equal to its weight, right? Because it's supporting it. On object B, the buoyant force is less than its weight because it sank.
Okay.
So
I
get it. Greater buoyancy force would be on B?
No, so A. For A, the buoyancy force equals the weight, and for B, it doesn't because it sank.
So then, is the buoyant force equal to, what is it equal to when it's dealing with mass? Because the buoyant force is equal to, like, the PF.
Well, so it's the mass of the object, in some sense, has zero to do with the buoyant force, right? So here's the formula for the buoyant force, and it doesn't involve the mass of the object.
Okay, so then the mg equals that. How does that that's also in relation to the buoyant force, and then how does that...
So if something is floating, then we know that the weight and there are no other forces present, then we know that the weight has to equal the buoyant force. And the weight is, of course, related to the mass.
Wait, so this, the density of the fluid times the volume times gravity?
Yes.
So in the second one, they have different volumes, right?
Yes.
Masses.
So A has to have a bigger volume.
Because
it's floating. Yeah.
Something with volume there.
Well, it's not so much that it's something with volume there, but we know that we know that in order to float, you have to have a density less than the fluid. So if they have the same...
density volume.
Yeah, right here, right? Okay. So to have a small density, we need a big volume.
Okay. I get it.
Oh, well. Lots of confusion there. Well, I hope there won't be confusion about Bernoulli. Oh, one other thing maybe to look at. We can do this one too, I guess. So here I have three different flasks. If I fill them up to exactly the same level, which one has the greater pressure on the bottom?
Same.
So, same fluid, these different containers, I fill them up to exactly the same level.
Same.
Which one has the greater pressure?
Are they all the same size of the base?
Same volume.
It doesn't matter. They actually are because they screw in to measure the pressure, but they don't need to be. No, there's obviously more water here, right? If I fill them to the same level, there's way more water here than there is there.
So the question is,
what's the pressure on the bottom?
And that would only have to do with height?
Yeah.
And why would that have to do with surface area on the bottom?
Because it just has to do with height. Right? Pressure increases with depth. Pressure is a quantity that exists any old place, right? So it can't have to do with area. Anywhere you swim in the ocean at the same depth, it's the same pressure.
Or if you swim at that same depth within a different lake, it's still the same pressure.
Yeah, unless it's a saltwater lake.
Western Dead Sea, you're swimming in a mercury
lake. Yeah, mercury would be really different. The pressure only depends on the depth, so it's the same for A, B, and C.
So would the total force be more if it was a bigger surface area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
The force is different.
Oh, all right.
Yep. Force is pressure times area.
So what were they talking about in the book when they were saying that when it's like a smaller area, it's a larger... Oh, are they talking force then, probably?
I think they're actually talking speed, but we're not there yet.
Oh, speed. Okay, yeah.
So larger force.
So... I have magical powers.
I knew it.
So this is called a Cartesian diver after Descartes, so you can play with it and decide how it works.
What?
Well, you saw that they're not. Oh, you mean in some sort of permanent sense.
I have no idea.
So I can play the same game, right? And if I'm careful, I can actually do it at an angle. Lots of fun toys. So here's, I think, exactly the thing that you were talking about from the book. So here we have a constriction, and here we have some water levels that allow us to see what the pressure is at different spots, right? So you can see that this thing went up, so the pressure here has to be lower than the pressure there. So that's really what's involved with Bernoulli's equation. And all of these things are involved with Bernoulli's equation. So this is another way of saying the same thing as there. So the shape of these things don't matter. The pressure, I hope it's obvious, has to be the same at the base of all of these things, or else the fluid would flow. So having this big bulge here accomplishes nothing to increase the pressure. The pressure just depends on the depth. Okay, so we got two equations. This one is Bernoulli's equation, this one is continuity. The continuity equation is, I think, the simpler one. And for both of these equations, we're thinking about, you know, situations kind of like this, where we have some sort of pipe that maybe is at different altitudes. And I hope it's perfectly clear that whatever mass flows in this end has to flow out this end. If this is a smaller area, then the speed must be more there than it is at the exit, because the same quantity is going to be coming out. So what we're doing here is we're comparing the area and the velocity at this location to the cross-sectional area and the velocity at that location. And we can calculate the quantity of material that's going in here. It's going to be the area times the velocity. And we better get exactly the same quantity of material leaving, which will be the area times the velocity. If we take a look at the units, the areas are going to be in meters squared, and the velocity is in meters per second. So we're getting the number of cubic meters that are leaving per second, or entering per second.
And that A is?
Cross-sectional area of the pipe. So this equation relates the pressure at these locations, the altitude, and the velocity. And it's basically conservation of energy written in a funny way. So it says that if we take the pressure and the altitude and rho g times the altitude and 1/2 rho v squared, you can kind of see kinetic energy here and potential energy there, that they have to be the same at both sides. Okay, so in the case of this constriction that we were talking about, because of the constriction, the velocity has to be faster here. And if we have a bigger velocity, if these things have to be the same, and we have a big velocity here, then there has to be a low pressure to counterbalance it. So it adds up to exactly what it was on the other side of the equation. Okay, and it's that low pressure that allowed me to suck up those little bits of stuff with the, I'll call it a vacuum cleaner.
How did that other one work, the vacuum one, where you were blowing the air at an angle?
I'm going to answer some homework problems, I think, first.
I think we're more interested in the other one.
Are you really?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to know how you did that.
No, you can ask me afterwards.
Or is it not recommended for at home?
No, it's recommended for at home. No tricks were required. No animals were killed in doing that film. So here's kind of a simple example, just calculating flow rate. So if you've ever looked at movies of blood flow, you know that the blood flow is way slower in the capillaries than it is in, say, the aorta, in the main veins. And if you think about it, the only way that's possible is if the zillions of capillaries that are branching out have more area than the aorta has. And that's all that's involved in this problem. They tell us what the cross-sectional area of the aorta is. It's the 2 square centimeters. And they say that it's flowing at 40 centimeters per second. And they say that the total cross-sectional area of all of those capillaries is 3,000 square centimeters, so a huge increase in area. So there's going to be a corresponding decrease in the velocity. Okay, a simple problem. Okay, so here we have a problem that involves Bernoulli, your basic squirt gun problem. So there's a big piece of the start of this problem that is asking you to figure out how fast the bullet is going to go if you want to hit 8 meters. So let's skip over that part and go right to the fluid part. So given that we know what exit velocity we need for our squirt gun, how hard do we have to push on it in order to make this work? That's basically the question. So the picture is one where we have a decrease in cross-section and therefore an increase in the velocity, so we don't need to push the trigger nearly as fast as the water is going to leave, because we have a huge decrease in the size. So this thing has a radius of 1 centimeter, and this thing has a radius that is 1/100 of that, or excuse me, a 1/10 of that, 1 millimeter. And the velocity that we need, if you calculate it through, is is, here it is, 14.45 meters a second. So we can really quickly figure out what the velocity that we need to have for our trigger finger in order to have this equation work, right? So the area here times this unknown push velocity has to equal the area here times the speed that we want to have it exit at, 14.45 meters per second. These things are all circles, so we know that the area is equal to pi r squared. The pi's are going to cancel out, so we have the radius, the big radius squared times the unknown velocity has to equal the little radius squared times the exit velocity that we want. So if we rearrange that guy, the trigger velocity has to be the ratio of the squares of the radii times that 14.465 meters per second. And we've just said that this ratio of radii is a tenth. So 0.14 meters per second. That's all our trigger finger has to move in order to have the exit velocity be 14.45 meters a second. So the quantity we're moving with the piston in the cylinder is the same quantity per second that's leaving the tip of the gun. It has to leave a lot faster because of the much reduced area. You're not happy. Say again? So this is just the same equation for continuity. And here we have a big area, and here we have a small area. And if we have a small area and a big speed, here we have a huge area, we're going to have a smaller speed. So the exit velocity, could write it here, is going to be the ratio of these areas times the 14.45 meters per second. So a huge reduction in area, huge change in velocity.
Is that 1 millimeter over 10 millimeters squared?
Yes.
Okay.
Or if you want, it's a tenth of a centimeter on top of 1 centimeter.
I was just making sure.
And we don't really, so usually we like to convert to meters for things,
right.
But as long as we have ratios like this, it doesn't matter.
Okay. I was just making sure I didn't miss
something. Okay. So as the area decreases, the velocity increases. So that's why we had faster speed in that constriction that we were looking at. And that we have to have the same total amount flowing, so if it's flowing through a smaller area, it has to be going faster. Okay. So we're not there yet. We're actually looking for the trigger force. So that's going to give us Bernoulli. Let's try and kind of draw up the situation. So first of all, the gun is horizontal. So for all intents and purposes, it's the same value of y on either side of the equation. So that's going to cancel out. So we have the pressure at the trigger point. We know what the velocity is. We just calculated. It's this 0.14 meters per second. That has to equal the exit pressure, and the exit pressure is just atmospheric pressure. Say again?
Which of those are densities?
So the ones that are connected by lines, those are the rows.
Which is density.
Which is density.
Okay.
And then here's our exit velocity squared. Yes? No. So water is fairly incompressible,
okay.
So it's going to have pretty much the same density every place.
Okay.
Even air, which is fairly compressible, you can assume has a constant density unless you have pretty big velocities, like something close to the speed of sound.
Okay,
so if we just kind of rearrange this equation, the difference in pressure between the trigger point and the exit point, That has to be 1/2 the density of water, which is 1,000, the exit velocity, which is this 14 meters a second, minus the trigger velocity, which was this basically 0.14 meters a second. We're trying to figure out how hard we need to pull the trigger. We figured out how fast we need to pull the trigger. That's that 0.14 meters a second. Okay, so let's take a look at the cylinder piece of this. So what's what? Well, we are pushing with some force F that we're supposed to calculate. Also, the atmosphere is pushing on this same thing. So the total pressure that we're applying is the pressure that we're applying, the force per area, plus atmospheric pressure.
Wait, for the top equation on that board, after the equal sign, is that, you have P2, right?
Yes, is which that, is just atmospheric
okay,
pressure.
So that's not a
yes.
P, that's a...
Everything's a P. No, though these two are, this is the rho.
Okay, is that rho zero then?
For no.
Pressure? Or is that a pressure? Oh.
You're good?
Okay, is that the thing pointing to P2, is that mm-hmm. a rho?
That's a P, that's atmospheric pressure. Okay. And so it's about equal to 10 to the fifth. Newtons per meter squared. But squirt guns work just as good in Colorado as they do here, so.
And so down there, that's also a P0.
Yes. And you can see that the P0s are going to cancel out. So this extra pressure is just the extra pressure that we are applying. So the trigger force we have to hit with is going to be the area of the cylinder times 1/2 the density of water times the exit velocity squared minus the trigger velocity, this very small velocity that we're providing. Okay, so we know the density of water, it's 1,000. We know the exit velocity, it's basically this 14 meters a second. We know the trigger velocity is this basically 0.4. And the cylinder, the area we're pushing on is a disk, so it has an area that is pi r squared. Good to go. So if we crank away on this, what we get is,
U1 is 0.14.
Say again?
U1 is 0.14? Or is that just the...
Yes. Yep. That's the trigger velocity.
How do you know which radius to use for this one?
So you use the areas that go with the numbers.
Okay.
So if we're on this part here, we want this area. If we want this part here, we want that area.
So what is the one on the right? That F equals A, that's one, the exit one?
This is the exit, right? Small diameter exit.
So that's going to be a higher pressure, or higher force.
Small that's yeah, kind of none of the above.
Cool.
So what it is a high speed, right? This is the one that's moving at 14 meters a second. The pressure is just atmospheric pressure because it's open to the atmosphere. That's why we're squirting it. Okay. Well, let's take a look at one more of these questions. Let's take a look at 58. So you might wonder how you could measure the flow of some material that you didn't want to contact, like gasoline. So here shows a setup that you can use to measure the flow rate just based on the difference in pressure that you get when you go through a restriction. So here they're telling us the density of the fluid, they're telling us what the difference in pressure is, and notice that it's the difference in pressure that played a big role in this problem. And they're claiming from this that we can actually calculate the speed at this location. And if we know the speed at this location, we know how many gallons per second are going to be coming out of this location also. So let's set it up. So it's the same altitude. So we don't have to worry about the y's in that equation. So here's again kind of the picture. We've got this restriction. And we're calling this side 1 and this side 2. And we know the difference in pressure. So P1 plus 1/2 rho, this is a rho, V1 squared has to be equal to P2 plus 1/2 rho V2 squared. And we know the continuity equation that this big cross-sectional area times V1 has to equal this small cross-sectional area times V2. So we can calculate what V1 is. It's just the ratio of the areas times V2. And if we plug that in here, I hope you can see that we're going to have only things that we know. So let's do all that. So here we're going to have the pressure difference, lower pressure where it's moving fast. And here we're going to have 1/2 rho V2 squared minus 1/2 rho V1 squared, which is A2 over A1 times V2 all squared. If we factor out the common V2, we've got 1/2 rho 1 minus the ratio of areas squared all times V2 squared. So final story, the exit velocity from which we can calculate how many gallons per second are flowing is going to be the pressure difference. And they tell us what the pressure difference is. Incidentally, in a real device, you would directly measure the pressure difference. You would measure it here and then find the difference numerically. Divide that by the density. The density is 700 in this problem. And then we have 1 minus the ratio of the areas squared. All of that square rooted is going to be the exit velocity. Notice that the ratio of the areas is the ratio of the radiuses squared. Time out. In terms of numbers, if you're interested, you want to check this out. This turns out to be 1.91 meters a second. And the total flow rate in cubic meters per second is pretty small, 8 times 10 to the minus 4th. If you convert that to gallons per second, it turns out you could fill your 15-gallon tank in 66 seconds. So it's about right for real gas and real situations. Okay.